Now we drive along a cracked two-lane highway, the sky above dark and cloudy.
It feels just incredible to be on the road again.
A dark-haired man.
I've been pretty isolated for 8 years since this car crunched me. Too busy just trying to survive.
His heavy-lidded eyes glance at the rearview mirror.
I went from being so brain-damaged I couldn't count change to finishing a master's degree. But this ain't exactly your inspirational cripple story.
Wearing headphones and chewing gum, he drives past green fields.
Part of the fun of being brain-damaged is you're constantly having to argue there is, in fact, something wrong. People see the limp, but they don't see the loss of memory, the judgment problems, the going to the bathroom 37 times a night, the difficulty swallowing, the abandonment and isolation.
Drenching rain blurs the windshield.
Here I'm going to Chicago for this gathering of disabled people. There are 43 million of us in this country, but we're as invisible as Casper the Ghost. I'd only known a few of the disabled people of Minnesota, so nothing prepared me for what I was about to walk into.
City workers block a sidewalk with portable metal railings. Groups of police officers watch from the street as the workers circle a large building with the railings. A strong black man in a wheelchair passes us. Near a back entrance, three policemen block his path.
No.
Yeah, but no, you can't be for a personal attendant.
No, for your own safety, you can't be.
Why is that?
It's a hard-hat area. Why is
for your own safety.
Well, my safety is my choice.
Later, protesters circle the building.
Like everybody else, I thought disabled folks were supposed to act tragic but brave, or else cute and inspirational.
One man squirms out of his wheelchair and blocks a sidewalk.
But these folks weren't sticking to the script.
People watch from the street as four officers tug the man in his chair out of the way.
The people watching were shocked that these kids were so angry. But that was how come I knew we were in the same club. Chicago was the first time I knew I wasn't alone.
Now, a photo shows the dark-haired driver as a younger man on a motor scooter.
I stopped my scooter at a stop sign and the car behind me didn't. Threw me 67 feet. It's a good thing I had a helmet in the trunk in case I needed it.
Another photo shows him sprawled on the pavement. At a rock club, a man holds a microphone.
How do you feel what's happening here tonight, Billy? It's for you. We love you.
So I'm lying in the hospital, unconscious, when they decide to have this big benefit for me. It was a sellout.
We love you. We miss you. Get well soon.
I'd been on the radio with a rock and roll show that walks and kills. I'd been on the scene for years. So the benefit's jammed with 1,500 people all telling me I'm their best friend.
It's me. Wake up, will ya?
I feel like I'm the only person in Minneapolis who hasn't met you yet.
More photos show Billy with friends sitting on his front steps playing guitar.
You'd think all I gotta do is wake up from the coma and everything's cool, right? Wrong.
From ground level, we watch Billy's feet limp along a sidewalk.
When I came home from the hospital, my body and spirit were broken.
He gets into a car.
I was brain damaged and I'd lost partial use of my left arm and leg. The doctors were talking to Mom about a nursing home for the rest of my life.
Hospital photos of Billy in a wheelchair.
I went from gallons of people around me to nobody there in a couple of months. The best job I could think of was selling pencils at the bus station. Things did not look good for the home team.
As Billy looks over his shoulder and backs his car out of a driveway, a title appears. When Billy Broke His Head and Other Tales of Wonder. He drives through city streets.
I've had my fun.
if I don't get well no more.
So here you are. You have this accident, and you lose a lot of stuff.
I said I've had my
motor function, friends, income, belonging, getting treated like a worthwhile, competent human being with an important contribution to me.
Said my head is feeling kind of funny. Lord, and I'm going down slow.
You lose your ability to make money, to survive,
somebody
or have any fun. You never get asked anywhere. You never get told anything. You lose stuff you can't even count, can't even name. The things that gave your life stability and meaning.
Lord, somebody please write my mother. Tell her the shape I'm in.
I only knew one disabled guy whose coat I could pull. A quadriplegic named Larry Keegan, who I'd run into on the music scene.
Now a bearded man in bed. An attendant dresses him.
I didn't break my neck. Jumped off a wall into the ocean and landed on my head in 2 feet of water. Broke my neck, C5-6 lesion. Now I'm laying there doing a dead man's float, holding my breath. My eyes are open. See little fish fly by and everything. And I realize the rest of my life is going to last as long as I can hold my breath. I hear this breathing. I don't feel it. I don't feel anything. And I look back, and it's this friend that I was diving with who had swam in and turned me over. He thought I was kidding.
The attendant zips Larry's boots on his feet. Raising Larry's limp, heavy legs, he pulls black jeans up to Larry's waist. Meanwhile, Larry's head rests on a pile of pillows and rolled-up towels. At his throat, a tracheotomy hole is surrounded by squares of white gauze. As the attendant rubs deodorant under his arms, Larry's heavy belly jiggles with each labored breath. The attendant shakes out a sweater, bunches it up between his hands, and slips it briskly over Larry's head. The 40-ish Larry has thinning brown hair with a close-cut beard and mustache. Later, the attendant stands behind him, holds him under the armpits, and lifts him into a wheelchair.
Oh, man.
With a wide white band strapped around his belly, Larry rolls his eyes and breathes through his mouth. As the attendant fastens a buckle around his right foot, Larry's left foot taps uncontrollably. His face twists in a grimace of apparent discomfort. His eyes roll back in his head. The attendant slips a short metal tube into the hole in Larry's throat, attaches a long plastic tube to it, then turns on a machine. Again, Larry grimaces.
Oh! So give me a deep breath. You don't have to do that, but I did it so fast for you guys this morning that I sort of got out of breath. Oh. Keep making faces like you're in pain.
Oh, do it?
You know what I mean? Like that. Are you in pain?
No, not really. Just breathing.
Just what?
Breathing on this machine.
I mean, you do it all the time. You do it when you're not on the machine, you know? You make... I don't see it anymore because I've known you so long. But you keep making faces.
Oh, yeah, really?
Like you're in pain. You're not in pain?
Only between my ears.
Later, Larry wears a headset with a stiff tube curving into his mouth.
Oh, man.
Life as a quad is a hard road to hoe. And Keegan's been there since he was a teenager.
But you're not right.
He's tough, and I'm always amazed by him. He types on the computer by biting on a tube in his mouth.
Larry types out the name Billy Golfus.
Years ago, Larry started a resort for disabled vets that was depicted in Born on the 4th of July.
See?
Now he's writing a book about his life.
I type with one hand, and I think it's hard, you know what I mean?
The title of Larry's manuscript is Some Get the Chair.
Larry's also a musician, and I guess he's kind of good at it. Since he's played front act for some guys he knows, like Bob Dylan, Neil Young and Eric Clapton.
Broken down in Mexico, and I'm burning up inside. No place I can run to, no place I can hide.
On a stage, he sings with two other men.
And I can't get up and live. I gotta find some peace of mind with every breath I breathe.
I hate to paint him as inspirational, but I figured if Laurie could do what he wants with his life, I could too. Before the accident, I'd made these radio documentaries that ended up on National Public Radio. As I recovered, I tried to put together support for a radio program about the brain damage. I had experience, a wall full of awards. I had the injury. I figured it would be a way to get working again. It was a good idea, but I think it needed a lot more sex and violence because nobody was buying.
In his bedroom, Billy stands in his underwear, barely hitting a punching bag with his left hand.
I asked the do-gooders at the State Department of Rehabilitation Services to help get me work. They give you all these tests to figure out what you want to be. Why the hell didn't they just ask me? They never got me one job interview in 8 years. My brain damage friend Janie says, as long as you don't have a job, then they've got a job. After years of not helping, they tried to close my case as rehabilitated. It took 4 levels of appeals to get them to provide not a job, not even interviews, but more schooling. I went back to the university to get my master's degree. With the brain damage and a memory banging on one cylinder, it's like climbing Mount Everest with your fingernails.
Okay, one more time.
I was studying things like Japanese to bring my brain back, and Voc Rehab wanted me to do something practical, or learn how to polish lenses for $4 an hour.
A subtitle they didn't understand.
That's
it, yeah.
They're civil servants and not known for their imagination or vision.
We glimpse his diploma.
I figured, if nothing else, a piece of paper might help me get work. But with the experience, awards, a grad degree and a good grade point average, I still couldn't get a job. Maybe I've got a bad attitude or something.
A garage door opens.
That's certainly what my father thinks.
A gray-haired man stands inside.
Dad doesn't get how hard it is to convince someone to hire you when you've got a disability. He figures some disabled people are just too gimped out to work and the rest of us are lazy.
Do you know that 76% of disabled people are out of work?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised.
So you're suggesting that as if I would just get the attitude.
But you're not that disabled.
But you're thinking about wheelchairs again. It's not a matter of degrees, and it's not a matter of, the disability is in my head. I got hit in the head. I had brain injury.
Well, you can't lean on that. You got to go.
I'm not leaning on it. I'm talking to you about it.
Uh-huh.
I'm not leaning on it. I went back and got a master's degree. I'm not leaning on it.
So, it's a matter of determination. You showed determination to get your master's degree, but you fell in love with writing, and I felt that you should be trying to earn a living otherwise.
Billy types with one hand.
I used the computer to help bring my mind back and got hooked on writing. Professor Christopher Robin says I'm the best writer in America. Or the world, I can't remember which. So I started writing this journalism stuff about how the helping systems deny you the basics you need to make it. Like Barb Nolan had to fight vocational rehab through 4 levels of appeals to get a chair that stands her up, so she can work and doesn't land in the hospital with pressure sores.
I got this chair by appealing my case to vocational rehabilitation in Kansas, nearly all the way to district court. I got $60,000 in services during my lifetime from Voc Rehab, and I figured out that by working for 25 years and not being on Social Security, raising my 3 kids, I saved the government $2 million. That's a pretty good trade-off. But I had to appeal and fight for almost 2/3 of those services. They were appropriate, they were reasonable, I should have had them. I talk to people all the time. They're in the same boat. They're being denied services that would enable them to be self-sufficient, enable them to get off this system.
Now, a violin hangs on a wall surrounded by photos.
Kay used to play in the Chicago Symphony. When she lost her sight and the money went, she hid it better than anybody I ever met. She lives in an apartment that her brother owns with some furniture from the old days. But I'm surprised she hasn't turned that piano into kindling wood because she lives on Social Security. And I've seen her eat a margarine sandwich for dinner.
As Kay plays piano, Billy lies on her couch.
Medical assistant sends Kay the same 34-page form they send me. And I can't do it without help. But if you don't dot your I's and cross your T's, they'll cancel your benefits.
Later, Kay holds out the forms.
I can't see it. So why would they send all this stuff to a blind person and say, you get this back by July X or your benefits are cut? And there's no prayer that I could get it ever back in my whole lifetime. Now, I don't know what these yellow sheets are. Since they're yellow, they must be very important. I have to have an affidavit stating that, yes, I am legally blind. Now, they have known this for 7 years, but I still have to verify every year or every 6 months that I can't see. Now, it's never going to get better. My particular condition will never get better. And I cannot read a single word of print of any kind, of any size. And yet, this is my task.
Billy at his computer.
I think I stand a better chance of writing detective novels. Nobody wants to hear about disability, I can guarantee you that. I've been sending out stories for years, and I got a wall full of rejections from some of the best magazines in America.
Now, a pretty young woman in a wheelchair rolls down a ramp in front of her house to a parked van.
This is Joy Mincy.
What? Are you gonna film me getting in my car?
She beckons the cameraman.
Come here. I was gonna say that, most of the time, it's children who are interested in how I get. They're always like, so how do you get in your car? And it's really, so I'm doing this for the kids, all right?
She lifts her feet onto the driver's side floor, then leans on her arms to lift her body into the seat.
All right, ta-da, I'm in the car, okay. And now we proceed to load our wheelchair. The cushion goes first, and in the seat.
By some fluke, my video teacher and I got a contract to make the documentary you're watching.
It's in the seat.
It's a one-shot deal, but it's the first deal I've had in years.
And across my lap.
So I'm starting to get out and meet some new people. Joy's one of them.
That's it. Bye. We see ourselves in the, I think, in the context of our humanity, of ourselves as beings, as thoughtful beings, as emotional beings, as spiritual beings, as sexual beings. People who are coming together with thoughts and desires, with relationships, friendships, you know, employment, activism, politics, you know, that's how we are beginning to see ourselves and explore ourselves. Whereas the medical community, of course, only focuses on us as flesh, focuses on us as not Joy Mincy, the artist and activist, but Joy Mincy as the paraplegic, you know, who experiences, you know, T12 paralysis and sensation loss.
Paraplegia is the result of an injury to the spinal cord.
A black and white lecture.
That break in the cord causes immediate and lasting paralysis of motion and feeling in the lower body. Most paraplegic patients will at various times suffer all of the following symptoms.
What they were essentially saying is that there is no possible way for a human to feel positively about disability. That's not an option. It's not an option. Disability is inherently a bad thing. It is inherently something that is just cause for suicidal thoughts.
In a 70s film, a pretty blonde woman sits in a wheelchair.
I'm never gonna walk.
She sits between two tables, staring sadly at an empty chair. Now, in a dance studio, Joy spins in her wheelchair, a man and woman twirling around her.
Crippled people ain't supposed to do what they want with their lives. They're supposed to be cheerful and grateful for crumbs like Tiny Tim. God bless us, everyone.
Joy traces the air gracefully with one hand.
Besides being pretty and smart, Joy's doing what she wants. And with this job making the documentary, I felt like things were starting to happen for me too. Maybe I could see some light at the end of the tunnel I'd been in for 8 years.
Billy enters a government building.
And then reality reared its ugly head. It's called a spin down. And it's a fancy word the system uses when they think your life's getting too cushy and they want something back.
He waits by a sign. We'll be right back. Later in an office.
I got 3 notifications in the mail. One canceling my food stamps, and one asking for a $200-and-some spend down.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one was something about $42 or something or other.
Okay.
Okay. And it's like, I've been trying for 8 years since this accident to get something going, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I finally get something going. I got $500 a month coming in. It's not very much money, you know, and you guys are taking away 2/3 of it. You know, and it's, it's like you hear about disincentives. It's like this is it's like you guys are discouraging me from trying to get off the systems. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't understand what this is about.
Okay, well, I'll explain it to you as best I can. Explain how your budget is
okay,
figured.
Please.
Here's a copy of the notice that you received, saying that your spend down is now $214 a month. Now, what I'm going to show you now is how we arrive at that figure, okay? We start with your 522, that's your Social Security. Then we subtract $20, that's a disregarded deduction that we give everybody. So that brings your income down to 502, okay?
Yeah.
Then we take your earned income, which is $500, okay? We subtract $65 from that $500. That's a deduction that we give everybody on their earned income. Okay, so that brings you down to 435 for your earned income, which is the number up here. Then we divide that number by 2 because we only count half of it.
We've got to stop this because I can handle a couple of numbers, but I can't handle a whole list of this number from this number, and then we do this deduction, then we divide this by 2, and I can't do it. Tell me why is $522 a month too much money? I mean, how can you live on $522 a month?
That's a very good question. But, you know, there's nothing that I can do to change the numbers.
I understand. Mr. Jenkins, could you live on $522 a month?
I suppose I could. I think it would be extremely difficult. I wouldn't want to.
I mean, it feels like it's kind of punishment.
Yeah.
It's punishment for having had an accident, having a disability. That's what it feels like.
Well, I understand how you feel about that. I've got approximately 400 clients, and basically they're all pretty much in the same boat because they're disabled or for whatever reason. Yes.
Yeah. It's not very much money.
No, it's certainly not. Okay, so I was explaining your spend down to you.
Yeah.
Okay, take the 719, subtract the 420.
At an airport, Billy gets out of a car.
I don't know when it dawned on me that it can't be all my fault. I mean, you gotta be a lawyer and an accountant and I don't know what else to make it through these helping systems alive. I got a master's degree with obstacles thrown in my way. And I'm smarter than the average bear. But when I start to get somewhere, these government systems throw the lead weights on. So what's the message they're giving me about getting a job and getting off the system? Millions of disabled people are trapped like me.
He struggles with heavy bags.
I thought the Americans with Disabilities Act was supposed to fix all this crapola. That sure was how the television was painting it.
Footage of a protest march.
The ADA is official recognition that prejudice exists. And it's supposed to allow us all kinds of access. It sends a clear message to employers that just because we operate differently, you can't deal us out of the game. But it ain't like nobody gave us nothing. I saw pictures of the GIMPs pushing pretty hard for this one. And when our team scored, Bush called it a freeing of the slaves. But freedom don't always mean equal treatment.
Now for takeoff, please put your seat back upright.
Billy walks down an airplane aisle.
Fasten your seatbelt low and tight across your lap. Insert the metal fitting into the buckle.
In his seat, Billy struggles with his seatbelt.
I'd been hearing about Wade Blank and ADAPT for years. ADAPT had organized that civil disobedience I'd stumbled onto in Chicago half a year before.
He wears an ADAPT t-shirt.
It will appear automatically. When you see the mask, please extinguish your cigarette.
And so I decided it was time to visit the holy land of the crippled kids. In any way, I just wanted to touch the hem of Wade's robe.
The comparison is Denver, who did civil disobedience starting in 78, has all accessible buses. And Chicago, who didn't do civil disobedience, now has 600 out of 3,200 accessible, which is less than 50%. So if you're...
And the moral is civil disobedience gets you what you want.
Right, and ahead of time.
Every day I get in the queue. Get on the bus that takes me to you.
A city bus drives past us.
Denver was a rush, actually meeting Wade and hearing war stories about how, in 1978, the gang of 19 blocked city buses to get wheelchair lifts put on them. Like Rosa Parks in Montgomery, those 19 people just wanted to ride the bus like everybody else. So they got out of their wheelchairs and laid in the street, and those buses couldn't move for a day and a half.
See, that's the first act of civil disobedience of its kind, so the police didn't know what to do. They called the mayor. Mayor Nichols said, I don't want any disabled people arrested in the city of Denver. That was his position. Mm-hmm. So I said, all right, everybody, we can rape, pillage, and plunder.
Billy and Wade walk across a park before the state house.
A decade and a half later, all of Denver's buses are accessible.
Trying to clean up.
So the city erected a plaque to the Gang of 19. Wade would clean the pigeon shit and other junk off it.
Nobody else is gonna do it for you.
Wade, you missed the spot up there.
All right.
The plaque reads, in part, ADAPT, We Will Ride. This intersection was the site of the first demonstration for wheelchair-accessible public transportation. In an open office, dozens of disabled workers gather around a television.
In the fight for civil rights for disabled Americans, these are the foot soldiers.
Wearing ADAPT t-shirts, hats, and buttons, the people turn to a man standing with a microphone.
This is the headquarters of ADAPT, the radical arm of the disability movement. ADAPT pioneered the fight for accessible public transit, and they won that puppy for good with the signing of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Their new fight is trying to replace nursing homes with home attendant care.
Why are we in this stupid, crazy fight? We know it'd all be a lot easier if we didn't have to run from one city to the other, if we didn't have to fight with the airlines about our right to be on their damn airplanes, if we didn't have to be out demonstrating in the hot, blistering sun and the driving rain, if we didn't have to hold those damn vigils all night long while the rest of our brothers and sisters were in jail, if we didn't have to get arrested and be in jail for several days, life would be so easy. So why the hell do we go through all this?
Tears roll down the speaker's cheeks.
We are in this fight because ADAPT has the dream of freedom for all inmates of nursing homes.
The TV.
The issue here is very clear. What to do with people who need help but can't help themselves. And that's why they've come here. Take a look at these pictures and we'll show you exactly what they're doing here at the State of Illinois building. They are blocking each and every stairwell, each and every escalator, each and
at the protest, people in wheelchairs physically block a man trying to push past.
I gotta get out of here.
Talk to the elevator people. They won't let us up. We don't go up. You don't go up.
Shame on you. I got an appointment.
One person falls out of his wheelchair, pulling the man with him.
Hey, wait a minute, you asshole.
Is your appointment really worth this to you?
How can I meet my appointment?
Channel 7's Andy Shaw is standing by live at the Illinois Central with late details. Andy?
Linda and Joel, they may be disabled, but make no mistake about it, this has been one of the best organized and most effective demonstrations.
Watching videotape of the Chicago action I'd been at 6 months earlier, I could dig what the adaptive devices were up to. By blocking people's ability to move freely around a state building for a couple of hours, they were protesting policies that lock up disabled people and take away their hope so that nursing home owners can make a profit. The nursing home lobby is powerful, and they've seen to it that more than 80% of the Medicaid money for long-term care goes to nursing homes.
As they protest cuts in the home care program.
We've organized, especially in the physical disability...
Politics is really about money, don't you think? I learned from Bob Kafka that ADAPT is fighting to get some portion of public money redirected to home care attendant programs so that disabled people on Medicaid have the choice to stay home, which is actually way cheaper, instead of being forced to go to a nursing home when they need help.
On the national level, the American Healthcare Association, the nursing home industry, brings in both public and private money, $76 billion. You know, about half of that, somewhere in the neighborhood of $38 billion is public money, mostly Medicaid money. You're talking about an industry that is big bucks, paid for mostly, you know, with public dollars, but it also devastates families who have the money, the ability to pay. You know, the average nursing home cost is now almost up to $40,000, $45,000 a year. Plus, you're putting a person in the most degrading. You're taking a person, whether young or old, out of a familiar surroundings, putting them in a warehouse, basically. Even if the warehouse looks nice, basically you're told when to get up, when to eat, when to go to bed.
One elderly woman hobbles toward another, propped in a chair.
Hey, ADAPT isn't making this up. There's nearly 2 million folks in nursing homes in this country, and a big chunk of them are under 65.
A younger man in a wheelchair.
Lee Swenson used to be a cop. Always wanted to be a cop. But he got ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, and he couldn't even draw his gun. You get disabled and you get caught in this netherland of rules that won't let you keep your own home or much of your stuff if you want to qualify for Medicaid.
We follow Lee out of his room and down a hallway.
Thank you, Eddie.
Now Lee lives in a nursing home.
All right.
Not too terrible as nursing homes go. It's basically clean and tidy, but no privacy or freedom of choice. Lee's mind is sharp as a tack, and he could live independently with the help of an attendant for a lot less money than it costs to live in this nursing home.
Lee breathes through a tracheotomy tube.
In general, must be aware of those of us with disabilities that because our bodies don't function, it doesn't mean that our minds don't function too, and that we're not capable of doing things, capable of making a significant
Now, a disabled woman drives a van, her right arm uncontrollably held up near the ceiling, her fingers locked in awkward, overly stretched positions.
I couldn't believe Robin Steffens could drive. Do you think I'd miss a chance to cruise with her?
Robin has lively blue eyes and a mouth with muscles tightly stretched and a permanent grin.
Robin, is it hard for you to drive?
No, it's easy.
It's easy?
Yeah. I learned in 2 days.
You learned in 2 days?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. About 8 years to try to get to somebody I could drive. Because no one believes I could drive. No one believes I could drive. It took me 8 years.
Fighting this system. Yeah. I got it.
Get somebody to teach you to drive. But actually, I knew how to drive. I just had to do it physically.
How about when you had to pass your license test? Tell me about getting the license test.
First, I was all scared. I didn't have a chance.
Her face muscles spasm.
Yeah, it must have just freaked him out to see you wanting to take a driver's test. Cracks me up.
He's scared shitless.
Yeah. And then so you had to go back a second time?
Yeah.
How'd you do then?
I did great.
You did great?
Yeah, that guy was not as scared.
Now, Robin waits as a woman in a wheelchair rolls out of the van onto a lift.
It turns out that Robin's only had one minor traffic ticket in 9 years of driving, which is a lot better than most of us can claim.
Go. Shit. Great.
Robin joins the other woman on the sidewalk.
I remember Wade telling me how hard he had to work to steal Robin away from her last job so she could work full-time for ADAPT. He wanted her because she's one tough cookie. Talk about vision. I mean, here's a woman who had to fight for 8 years to convince some bureaucratic schmuck to let her take a driver's test.
Both in motorized wheelchairs, the two women rolled down a city sidewalk.
Wade looked at Robin and saw only her capacities and power and charm.
They approach a gold-domed building.
So I got this flash that the same thing that's throwing obstacles in Robin's way, and mine as well, is what's keeping Lee Swenson in that nursing home. The physical disabilities are not the problem. The real barriers are the attitudes that see us as sick, incapable, defective, victims of a fate worse than death. It'd be a stone oversimplification to say that we get these attitudes from cereal boxes or catch them from toilet seats or from watching TV.
Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Dr. Crusher believes my paralysis to be permanent.
The able-bodied Riker stands at the Klingon Worf's bedside.
I'm sorry. I want you to help me die.
There must be other options.
No, there are not. I will not live as an object of pity or shame. My life as a Klingon is over.
Now, a logo for the MDA telethon.
We are here live in Las Vegas.
It's a kind
this
of a chicken and egg thing.
Jerry Lewis,
while movies and TV reflect the attitudes of the culture, they also
Jerry
help
Lewis.
Create those attitudes.
My kids cannot go in the workplace. There's nothing they can do. They've been attacked by a vicious killer. I'm begging for their survival.
When you walk,
we're always seen as helpless victims, keep your or special inspirations.
Footage from the movie Passion Fish.
Or we're shown as so full of anger and self-pity, needing a swift kick from the nearest non-disabled person.
When I get stronger, I'll quit drinking.
If you keep drinking, you will not get any stronger.
You listen to me. I hired you, and I want you to do what I tell you.
Or else books and movies show us as villains.
Peter Sellers in a wheelchair.
Dark, creepy forces. And monsters.
Mr. Bond, it's good to see you again.
James Bond fights a man with a hook for a hand. In The Hunchback of Notre Dame, Quasimodo spits from a high balustrade. Now a man hops into a room, hands twisted behind his back, one foot held out in front of him.
I suppose you can see playwright and actor Neil Marcus as a monster because he's hard to understand and his body is disabled. Packaging is everything. But Neil tells me his whole game is to change the way people look at disability.
Neil presses his Adam's apple. Billy watches him attentively.
I think that is the power of art.
You're changing the way people look at you.
Yes.
Are you all right? Did you just order?
Yes.
Oh, no. Could we try this again, please?
Now, in a performance.
Cheeseburger.
You want a cheeseburger?
Yes! He wants a cheeseburger!
Now, on a campus, Billy walks with a man whose back is severely swayed.
People with disabilities of all kinds are told in one way or another, you are defective as you are abnormal, you can never be fully human until and unless you're cured, or at least corrected to the point that you arrive at some semblance of normality, which is to say, you approach as close as possible to being like non-disabled people. There's no positive way within this view of things to be a person with a disability.
At Stanford University, Paul Lungmore teaches a class called The History of Human Differences. He gets his students to consider that disability is not so much sickness and a chance to get chicken soup as it is a political fact.
Paul's classroom.
See, the problem is when you are defined exclusively as an object of charity, you're not in a position to demand anything as your right. When you begin to assert yourself as having a right to reasonable accommodations that allow you to operate in the different way in which you operate as a person with a disability, then you initially, at least, will be charged with seeking special privileges. Because you're not supposed to demand these things as a right. These are things that we dispense to you out of our goodwill.
The idea that people with disabilities are a political minority and not sick is right and brilliant and perfect. When I started to understand that we're treated and dissed just like any other minority, everything clicked. A gold star for Professor Paul. The day I visited his class, they were discussing Jean Stewart's novel, The Body's Memory.
There's a great t-shirt to come out of this book. It's in the next to the last scene in the story when Kate goes down to the ocean, crawls out of the wheelchair and across the sand and swims rather awkwardly out into the offshore, and a Greek fisherman spots her. This is the dialogue. He looks down at her. Are you drowning? Kate smiled up at him. No, I'm swimming, she said. I think that would make a great t-shirt. I told that to one of the disabled students, and they said, well, nobody knew what that meant. And I said, yeah, but that's the point. They wouldn't know what it meant, so they'd say, what does that mean? And you'd say, well, you look at me, and you think I'm drowning, but I know that this is the way I swim.
In a city plaza, people surround a troupe of bongo drummers. A man in a wheelchair watches.
If you're disabled, Berkeley is the place to be.
A man with no legs passes in a wheelchair.
Disabled people don't even get stared at here. The independent living movement was born here, a chance to do it ourselves and dodge the do-gooders. And the undisputed daddy of that movement is this cat named Ed Roberts.
Billy limps up a ramp to a house.
Before going back to Minneapolis, I wanted to see Ed, because I figured if anyone knows about changing attitudes and making things happen for himself, it's Special Ed. He's paralyzed from the neck down, including the muscles around his lungs, so he breathes on a respirator and sleeps in an iron lung. He gets up late, so I knew he'd probably be in the box when I got there.
Billy enters a room with a bright yellow cylinder at its center. Ed lies inside, his head resting on a pillow outside one end, a mirror slanted above him so he can see around.
Welcome to my humble abode.
Billy stands looking down at Ed's gray-bearded face.
When we talked about it on the phone, it scared me. And when I'm here with you in the lung, it doesn't scare me at all.
It's funny because you're all of your head's up, right, Ed?
This is the head?
This is the head, yes. And people think it's awful. It's just a breathing mechanism. It works very much like your diaphragm inside your body. It works by air pressure. I affectionately call it my womb with a view, because it's very comforting being in here. It's warm. It's I don't have to hold the respirator hose. I just relax and it breathes for me. And that's a real nice thing. That's what this comes out, 6 feet.
A young man slides the cylinder apart.
Kind of a big room.
Lying on a gurney-like bed, Ed breathes through a respirator hose held between his teeth.
In the 60s, when Ed went to the State Department of Rehab Services for help getting a job, they called him infeasible. I mean, here's a human vegetable that can't even breathe for himself.
Ed lets go of the hose.
Okay.
His attendant pulls him out of the cylinder's top piece.
14 years later, Governor Jerry Brown appointed Special Ed the director of that same state agency.
Ed gets a sponge bath.
Oh, I feel so good.
A sling under Ed's body is attached to a hydraulic crane, which raises him off the stretcher.
Now, actually, Ed's just into bondage. These are just sex toys.
But there's hardly any difference between being tied up and being paralyzed.
It's not very equitable.
No, so if you have a partner that likes to be tied up, we're both in trouble.
No, but if he starts turning blue, an ambulance.
Later, he sits in a wheelchair.
What we have to do is we have to change the old attitudes that have been there for many years. In order to change the old attitudes, we got to get out in society. We've got to be seen. We got to be the neighbors. We got to be the lovers. We got to be the friends. We got to be seen in a very natural way. Disability is a part of life, and some of us are going to have it. And some of us are going to have it young, and some of us are going to have it older. But whenever it comes, our job, you and I, is to make sure that we know we don't have to put somebody in an institution. We can have high expectations of them in their future. And by helping them begin to take control of their own lives, they can go back to work or go to work or do dream what they want to dream and make their dreams come true like we all do.
Now, a man in a wheelchair reads a newspaper.
Nowadays, along with folks like Hale Zukas, another co-founder of the independent living movement, Ed runs the World Institute on Disability.
Hale Zukas wears a helmet with a rubber-tipped pointer on it, which he uses to turn the pages. A man with a knife speaks to Ed.
Anything that destroys my balance, destroys my ability, whether it's this, a gun, or whatever. Right now, you should almost begin your sweep.
Tony Johnson encouraged Ed to do karate.
I'm going to stick you. Right about here is where you start, because my leg's coming in fast. Yeah, that's it. That's it. That's perfect. Don't wait too long. Okay, that's good.
In a hallway, Ed uses his wheelchair to knock Tony in the legs.
Okay, all right, that's good, that's good.
He pins Tony against a wall.
Yeah.
People talk about some of us are very angry. Of course we're angry. We've been through the worst kind of atrocities. Attitudes towards us that see us as vegetables, see us as a sick and unable, having no future. I mean, that's got to piss you off. And to me, anger is one of the best things we got going in this movement. Because when you're angry, it gives you a tremendous amount of energy. Well, I'm beginning to see
the light. Seeing Special Ed in Berkeley, Professor Longmore's class, made me come back to Minneapolis wanting to do something to make a difference. Some people work very hard. You figure anything's going to start small, but like my dad says, you've got to try.
Now, a lobby crowded with people wearing campaign signs.
This is where Billy Goff is. Billy Goff is running for Park Board. Billy Goff is running for Park Board at large. He's disabled. He's in an accident about 7 years ago. And
a man brings passersby to Billy.
Crazy Eddie Fellini called me chicken, told me to put my money where my mouth is and run for Park Board. Seemed like a good idea at the time.
In an auditorium, Billy addresses a large crowd.
My name is Billy Golfus, and I'm running for Park Board at large. And my mission is to tell you that I'm wonderful without actually saying it. The beauty of our parks and lakes distinguish Minneapolis from any other city in the country. And I'm especially concerned about two groups that always get excluded, elderly and disabled people. I'm a disabled guy. Being disabled is as close as you can get to being invisible. For example, right in this very room, we have delegates who are wheelchair users. If you look around, you might see a couple. And today there was a vote on rules by people having to stand. Now that's dumb and insensitive.
People in the audience smile and clap.
I hate to see disabled people treated that way. We're the largest minority in America. Wake up, it's time.
Later, Billy gets out of a car. Leaning his cane against the door, he holds a Walkman in his weak left hand. With his stronger right hand, he tries to pull the headphones over his baseball cap. The cap falls, and he picks it up.
I'm 49 years old. I'm brain damaged and hemiplegia. I haven't had a job or any income to speak of in nearly a decade, and they don't want me on their park board.
Across the street, Billy's dad puts cushions into a boat on a trailer.
My dad's in his 80s, and he wants to go fishing.
Dad, what time are we going to go?
Didn't act like you wanted to go at 5 o'clock.
You said 5 o'clock. You know what time it is right now?
His dad smooths a registration sticker on the boat.
Dad, it's 4 hours later than you wanted to start. Well, you know, come on.
I would do it if you were serious about going.
If I was serious, Vasemir.
Later, they drive down a highway.
JJ is very, very hard of hearing, but he doesn't think he's disabled. I know they know something about prejudice because he hides his age. Mark Twain says, better to be a young Junebug than an old bird of paradise. I wish Dad could understand that he's one of what he calls those disabled people.
At the edge of a lake, JJ backs the boat down a ramp. Billy stands above on a dirt-filled landing edged with railroad ties and pulls on a long rope attached to the boat. As the boat slips off its trailer and into the water, he struggles to pull the boat closer. Later, he and JJ stand in the boat, eating sandwiches.
Not bad rolling. Not bad.
They both chew and stare into space.
I went to see some disabled people in a nursing home. Mm-hmm. Went to see some disabled people in a nursing home.
What's keeping them in there?
No.
Their disability?
What do you mean?
So what are you going to do for these people? You've got to have enough money to take care of. They don't have it. You don't have it. What do? You'd have to leave them in a nursing home. I wouldn't like it any more than they do.
Yeah.
But if I don't have money to go elsewhere, what am I going to do? What is anybody going to do? If the money isn't there to take them somewhere else.
What would happen to you if... Like 3 years from now, you had a stroke or something, and something serious happened to you.
I would. What would happen to me?
Yeah, I mean, I'm asking about.
What would I want?
I'm asking about if it might be necessary to put you in a nursing home.
I don't want to go to a nursing home, and I'm telling you that if it looks like it's terminal, then I would want to jump off the bridge or do something to end it. There's no point in living and suffering.
What makes you think that being disabled is suffering? What makes you think that being disabled is suffering?
Well, for me, it would be.
Opening a tackle box, JJ hooks a bobber on the end of a fishing line, then a tiny bait fish.
Dad would rather jump off the bridge than be disabled, and my brothers feel the same way. Dad says, you could overcome your physical difficulties if you had determination. I would if I were in your place. Now let me get this straight. They'd jump off the bridge, but I need a little determination. They think I'm not okay the way I am. And if I'm still disabled, it must be my own fault. I didn't wear the lucky charm or eat my Wheaties or do whatever to make this embarrassing thing go away.
Billy balances by leaning on his dad's shoulder. Then he casts off.
Maybe because I'm brain damaged and Dad's getting on in years, neither of us remembered to bring the gas line for the boat. So we couldn't move, just like some people I know. But we had a really special day anyway. I suppose that's the moral if you think the story needs one.
Our view pulls back to show the boat, still tethered to the landing. Fade to black. A title reads, When Billy Broke His Head and Other Tales of Wonder, is dedicated to the memory of Reverend Wade Blank and Ed Roberts. This program has been described by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston, described by Corey Couture, descriptions read by Connie Blazek. Funding provided by Independent Television Service. Major funding for DVS provided by the U.S. Department of Education. For more on DVS, call 1-800-333-1203. Credits roll. Produced and directed by Billy Golfus and David E. Simpson. Written and narrated by Billy Golfus. Edited by David E. Simpson. Thanks to all the people who let us into their lives, especially those who ended up on the cutting room floor. Copyright 1994 National Disability Awareness Project. Independent Television Service.
Major funding for this program was provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Additional support was provided by the following funders.
In part, Minnesota State Arts Board, through funds provided by the state legislature and Very Special Arts Minnesota.